Welcome. This is The Lowdown.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
The Lowdown. With Damian Barley.
You realize this is our radio show,
yeah,
right?
Jason Ross.
But they just need to get it right.
And Ken Rudolph.
My honest answer would be something that's probably going to be offensive.
The Lowdown.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light. With great beer comes great responsibility. The Lowdown.
You mad, bro?
You mad, bro?
Knowing nothing in life but to be legit.
Now.
Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't sick.
This is The Lowdown.
Well, Damian and Kara, just, they're super people. And they were like one of the first to call me and tell me what they wanted to do. And, you know, it was very touching for me. But I'm not surprised. I mean, they're great people. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time with them. And I love both of them, and I appreciate what they're doing.
Now, Damian's run a half marathon in training. This will be his first marathon. That's quite a challenge that he's taken on, isn't it?
Well, I'm not surprised. Damian, when he decides to do something, he goes all out. And so I'm not surprised about that. And, you know, with Kara, I just think she wants to show her love and her support, and I appreciate him.
Legendary voice of Pat Summitt. That's a keeper.
Right?
How cool is it to have that?
It's just an amazing woman, and we're in a very fortunate position this afternoon that we're able to be able to share a lot of the memories and some of the great moments and stories today. Our co-host, Damian Barling, has a huge, huge emotional connection with the coach today. So we're going to carry you through this today, brother. And we also hope to hear some fantastic stories from Kara Lawson later on today. I just want to hear about recruiting, being recruited by Pat Summitt, how she comes in. Kara played as a freshman, 37 games. And I'm thinking that's got to be the most nerve-wracking experience to come from Virginia. You're recruited by one of the greatest coaches in the history. And you're playing as a freshman.
Yeah,
and
you get it.
And you get that glare.
Yeah.
You get that glare every single time you make a mistake, which is inevitable as a freshman. You're going to make at least 26 mistakes in each game. You're going to get that glare.
It was funny that no one knows this, but as that clip was playing, you look up and say, okay, you can't talk.
No,
Jason goes first.
You're out.
Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. You're out. We got you.
Kara Lawson, as Ken Rudolph there mentioned, will join us at 2 o'clock. Sally Jenkins will join us at the bottom of this hour. Sally's been on with us before. We discussed the culture of college sports with her. She's also one of Pat's closest friends. She was Pat's biographer.
She wrote two books.
Two books, yeah.
I thought it was just one. And then we're doing the research and find out two books. So she's going to have some great stories and intimate knowledge as well. And it's one of those things where we talk about this, and we've had to deal with this a lot this year.
Too much.
Losing greatness.
Yes.
I mean, absolute existential greatness.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you get past the emotional aspect of it, it's just a joyous thing for me that it just gives me great confidence in people, right? That there's these amazing people that are here, and we're probably never going to have another one like a Pat Summitt, or even in a different genre, a different area, a person like Buddy Ryan, but just when you have these people that have come through and really touched so many lives, it's really great to celebrate their life.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know her. On the basis, I can look at an incredible coach. But when you see people like Nancy Lieberman's going to join us, see things she's tweeted, Kara's tweeted, that Sally will talk about, they're not talking about the wins. They don't talk about any of that.
No.
They don't talk about any of the stuff that I would know. I can see a legendary coach.
Yeah.
They're talking about her. And I think that's where the power is of the person.
Exactly.
And I know, Damon, you could do way more on, and you know her personally, but just.
You lived in a house. Yeah.
When you're talking about, okay, I can list the number of wins and the championships and the people that everybody graduated and all the final. I mean, that's going to get her attention forever, and it should. But what people will say even on top of that is the personality and the person. That's pretty awesome.
A 100% graduation rate.
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy. That means she's standing out there in the hallway.
Especially
if you don't go to class. She's like, where are you going?
The other amazing thing you got to realize about that graduation rate is when you're drafted to the WNBA, your school year isn't over yet.
That's true. You got a couple months left.
Yeah. So when you get drafted in, generally it's April, and the season, depending on the year, will start in either May or June. You haven't taken your finals yet. There's a lot of times where you'll see this a lot with the players who are really eager to graduate. They'll miss games in the first part of the year of their rookie year because they need to go take their finals and they need to finish up school.
Because you don't want to be – I mean, if this was a list today where you go, all but one person, you do not want to be the one. Well,
and it's one of those things where I'm sure she really encouraged them because, you know, when Coach Summitt started coaching in the 70s and then going in through the 80s and 90s, there's really not a viable option for women to play basketball. Yeah. You have to go overseas. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she stressed to them, hey, look, there's not really a viable place for you to take your talent. So you have to go to school. You have to make sure you get your classes, get your grades, get your studies done. Because, you know, with a lot of these other guys, we talk about Coach Calipari, and I'm sure he's not encouraging these individuals that come to Kentucky to go to class.
He's saying, Give me a year,
and I'll give you a lifetime.
Yeah. And you know what? That works for them.
Yeah, it does.
Doesn't work in the NBA. That doesn't work in the WNBA.
Exactly.
A rookie player's contract in the WNBA, a first, you know, a number one overall pick might be around $50,000+. You get to be the best in the WNBA. Not speaking about overseas at all, you're making 110.
Yeah, totally different scale.
Completely. Yeah.
So it's a whole different world there. Pat really is. She's an amazing woman. And there are a lot of incredible stories that we could share. I know Sally Jenkins will. As Jason mentioned, Nancy Lieberman will join us. Just a quick note, too. You probably won't hear a lot of conversation about Yorgos Papayannis today with Nancy Lieberman.
No. Yeah.
We give you our words. If some major breaking news happens with the Sacramento Kings, we'll tell you. Other than that, the draft was a couple of days ago, and free agency starts Friday. That's pretty much what you need to know.
We'll get to it.
The A's beat the Giants.
Yeah,
there's time for all that. Which I know that I know that's not a typo. That I know I'm a little disoriented this morning. That actually happened.
Yeah, that was huge.
The A's beat up,
dominated
the San Francisco Giants.
Ingram was awesome.
I think the real Jeff Samardzija just showed up.
Ooh,
you know what I'm saying? His last couple of starts have been. Oh, that's the guy that pitched in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have the ability that other people at this radio station and honestly people around the world don't necessarily have, and that's that connection with people who are so close to Pat Summitt. And for those who got up and turned the TV on or turned on to various radio stations or programs or whatever it may be, you heard her being discussed. I could tell you the first time I met her, I was I couldn't have been more nervous. I was more nervous meeting her than anyone I can think of. And practice had just wrapped up, so I was very much in her world the first time I met her. And I, you know, stood up. We were sitting down watching practice, stood up. Miss Summitt, it's wonderful to meet you. And she laughed. She was like, oh, bless your heart. It's Pat, honey, or you can call me Coach. And she put her arm around me and she walked me to the other side of Thompson Bowling Arena where they were practicing on Pat Summitt Court. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, that is her personality. You see all of these clips of her today, and she's so fiery, and she's yelling, and she's, get over here, and she's got those eyes. You know, there's clips of Candace
glare.
Parker, and, you know, Kara Lawson was talking about it on SportsCenter, that glare, that stare, and outside of, you don't see, like, I never saw anything in that nature.
Yeah.
The firmest voice she ever used with me was in one of the funniest situations I can remember. As you mentioned, I lived out there.
We lived
with her for a number of months, and there were times when Kara was traveling, and, you know, Tyler, her son, had moved out, and he was living on campus, and he was playing for Bruce Pearl and the men's team. So there were a lot of nights where it was just me and her. And this particular weekend, her sorority sisters came down. So that you can't imagine. I mean, I'm partying with mid 50 year old women.
I bet that's super ribald. They're like, oh, just getting crazy.
And Pat is notorious for eating dinner extremely late. Yeah. And so she was always grilling. It was salmon. It was steak every single night, even if it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
That's what was happening. But
like what time is late? Like
9:30.
Okay. That is kind of late. Yeah.
So the crown. Yeah. And the wine is flowing pretty heavily. And she had just gotten this hot tub installed on her deck. And her sorority sisters are, hey, Pat, let's fire up the hot tub. All right. Damien, go out there and turn up the hot tub. Yes, ma'am. Go out there, turn on the hot tub. I'm doing the dishes. And you know, bringing the new bottles of wine out, because that's what I did. I always felt I needed to do something to help. And one of the women, her name was Mary Margaret. She goes, hey, Damon, you going to get in the hot tub with us? Swear to God, Pat, in the straightest face, sternest voice she's ever used with me. Damon, I think it's time you go to bed.
It's about to get adult down here.
Yes, ma'am.
Because if you get in that hot tub, I can't help you. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Good choice. Good choice.
Good night, everybody.
Ladies might get them a little chunk of a little sugar.
But she was
trying to get some sugar.
All I know is Pat said, go to bed.
Yeah. I'd have listened to that, too.
I was 20. I'm a grown man.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Not anymore.
I'm going to bed.
You know what I heard this morning? You know, obviously there are tributes all across the dial. And one of the individuals who knew her very well and an outstanding collegiate basketball player as well is Robin Roberts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Robin did a tribute on a television show this morning. And one of the cool things she was talking about, she said that you were talking about her cooking all the time, right?
Yep.
And she said that she had either two kitchens or two stoves.
Yeah.
And they'd be going all the time.
All the time.
So they had two, is it stoves. Two kitchens or two
no,
stoves?
No, she had two stoves.
Two stoves in the
two
same
stoves,
house?
But yeah, and then grilled.
And then the grill.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's That's cooking.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. She made this jalapeno corn.
Ooh.
Where she would, and when she made, and her sweet tea.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So the jalapeno corn is like, it's cream cheese.
Now we're hungry.
Yeah, cream cheese with jalapenos in the corn, and she bakes it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, it's incredible. I'll tell you my first story of Pat's cooking. It was the day after I met her at Thompson Bowling Arena. We stayed the night at her house. Wake up, Pat's always on the run. But she comes out, hey, you guys want breakfast? Yes, ma'am. So Pat goes in the kitchen and makes like 6, 7, 8 eggs, and she makes an entire unopened package of bacon and an entire tube of biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like looking around. I was like, all right, Kara's here, Pat. Is Tyler here? No, it's just the three of us. Okay. So she pulls all this stuff out, makes me a huge plate, pours me about a 32, 36 ounce glass of orange juice, fills it to the top.
Yes, sir.
Slides it all over. Here you go, baby. I was like, oh, Coach, are you going to sit down and eat? Oh, no, I got to get going here after a little bit, but I'll sit down with you. She put like 3 biscuits on the plate. I'm still full from that breakfast. But she doesn't believe in...
Got to feed you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to eat.
Yeah. I'm not going to eat this piece of steak, Damon. You go and finish that. Like, no, Coach, no. Like, I can't eat that. Like, I'm not going to eat that right now. Like, oh, go clean the plates. Like, no, Coach, we'll have it tomorrow.
I'm still in the hot tub.
Right? Exactly. I'm going back in the hot tub.
She loved to cook.
She has
loved, and not. I take that back. She loved to cook for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like she loved to do for people.
Yeah, do for people.
Yeah.
Anyone who came into town would come. Opposing coaches, they would come, you know, straight to her. Recruits.
Yeah.
Football recruits. Mm. She would be in the recruiting process for Philip Fulmer.
Yeah.
For Bruce Pearl. Anyone you can think of.
Well, I saw that today that Peyton Manning consulted her for about his senior season coming back. And I mean, just think about, really? But he did. And it makes sense. Why not get her expertise, her knowledge, her opinion?
You know, one thing that we'll ask Kara Lawson when she joins us at 2 o'clock, she's in Knoxville now. We've had this conversation a number of times. We had it with Sally Jenkins. She's also in Knoxville. Is the impact those colleges have on cities like Knoxville.
Oh, yeah.
Losing Pat today is just an extraordinary blow to that community.
It's got
to
be.
There are no two bigger names in Knoxville than Pat Summitt and Peyton Manning.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I can't wait to hear some more stories. I want to hear, because I don't know, we talk about the glare, but I kind of want to hear about some of the I guess, being chewed out with that glare. Because sometimes, that's the one thing about coaches and I'm going to talk about this later on. Is like, and when I'm growing up, for me, it's probably one of the most powerful words as a kid when I was growing up. Coach, like there are guys that were my coach when I was 9 years old that I still call them coach.
Yeah,
because that's what that means to me. And so when this so unique when a coach can just tear you, can just undress you. I mean, the way they
hopefully
can do
with good intentions.
Oh, it's always with good intentions because they want to, you know, break you down and build you up into something better. But they can just cut to the quick.
They can.
They cut right to the heart of your. Like, oh, come on, coach.
Yeah. I meant to ask because I know it came in right off the top. What was that from that we played at the beginning?
That clip was following. That was right after Pat was diagnosed with early onset dementia and Alzheimer's type. She was still coaching for the Lady Vols, and I had been given the opportunity to run in the New York City Marathon, and so the idea was, well, I'll run in the marathon if we can raise money for Alzheimer's awareness. And this was right before the Pat Summit Foundation was formed. So I was able to run for 3 straight years. First year it was technically it was for the Alzheimer's Association, but they knew that in the end we were going to be working with the Pat Summit Foundation. So I was able to run the New York City Marathon over 3 years, 2011, 12, and 13. And it was 2012 that was canceled. If you remember Hurricane Sandy,
yep, that's
hit
Hurricane
New York,
Sandy. Yes, sir.
And the marathon was ultimately canceled, but we had still raised all the money. So over the 3 years, we wound up raising somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 for the Pat Summit Foundation, just based on those marathons. And that clip that we aired at the top of the show was a clip of a reporter in Knoxville asking her about it for that first marathon.
Gotcha.
In 2011.
That's great.
It's a beautiful, beautiful legacy that you get to be a part of.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
I know you'll keep it forever, but
yeah,
you have to.
Beautiful.
That's beautiful. I had no idea that clip existed until about 4 this morning when the reporter sent me a link. The reporter who's talking to her in that clip sent me the YouTube link.
That's awesome.
I had never seen it. I didn't know it was there.
That's
and
really cool.
It's amazing. One thing I've spent the last few days looking for that I didn't have, that was just the last – really lengthy conversation I had with Pat was a few years ago, and I had to call and tell her that Kara's dad was in the hospital and we expected him to die.
Yeah.
He had suffered a massive stroke. He had gone into cardiac arrest, and we were told he's going to die. We're just waiting for it. He's still alive today, by the way.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
I had to call Pat and tell her, and Pat has always had a really rocky relationship with Kara's dad, and that he wanted her to go to Stanford, and when she called Pat to say she was going to come to Tennessee, her dad took the phone and hung up on her, hung up on Pat.
Wow.
And so we had shared conversations about him numerous times. He wasn't, you know, really a part of our life, but she knew that that was an important thing. So we had a really long conversation. That was August 1st, and my birthday was 12 days later on August 13th, and we were still in the hospital. We were in the hospital the whole month, and she called me on my birthday and left me one of the most just amazing messages.
That's awesome.
But it's several years old. Like,
personal.
You know how visual voice no, I wanted it for me.
Oh, okay.
I was looking on visual voice, you know, visual voicemail on iPhones. Like, it only goes back like a couple months or whatever. I guess it's just off in the AT&T universe somewhere.
Yeah,
there's got to be a way to find that stuff.
I think so.
I know I didn't delete it. I know that because and then I called her back and we had a brief conversation.
Yeah.
But it was just like, that's the woman that she is.
Yeah.
You know, she made it a point to call and
touch
wish
people.
Us happy birthday.
She made it a point to touch people, touch lives, influence people.
And that's why she's so impactful. You know, Jason mentioned, you know, as a sports fan, you know, the wins and the losses and the things like that. But her impact on not just women's basketball, but women in sports is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, women in sports now is still a touchy thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at people like Kate Fagan and Sarah Spain, and you look at these women who make their – you look at Kara Lawson who make their living covering men's sports, and there's still a great portion of men in this world that don't like it.
Right.
And – imagine what it was like for her when she started knocking down barriers decades ago.
Was she 24? Did I read that?
How did she get the job at 24? She's 1 year older than quite a few of the players on her first team. 1 year older.
That is courage.
That's crazy.
Sally Jenkins is going to join us at the bottom of this hour. She was Pat's autobiographer. Nancy Lieberman is going to join us at 1:30. She actually, in 1976, was Pat's teammate on the Olympic team. In 1979, Pat was her coach. That's how, you know, that's how young she was.
Yeah.
When she took over that position, she got it straight out of, you know, when she graduated from University of Tennessee, Martin, I think it was called.
You're right. Yep.
And the coach for Tennessee went on a leave and never came, was never brought back.
Mm-hmm.
And it took Pat a few years. And then she started winning and winning and winning and winning. And the rise of women's basketball. Yeah.
The model program.
Yeah.
Became synonymous with the rise of Pat Summitt and the University of Tennessee. And when you look at those Tennessee programs of the early 90s and the fact that the WNBA started in 1997, that's not an accident.
Right.
Because that was right at the beginning of UConn. Like, UConn hadn't emerged yet. They, I think it was 1996 or 1995 that UConn really emerged as a power program. So it was very much what, you know, and this was past Nancy Lieberman's time. This was Pat, past Annie Meyer's time. This was Pat Summitt as the coach of the University of Tennessee that took women's basketball to the point where they could have a professional basketball league in this country.
Exactly. I want to hear about, I understand that there was a bit of a contentious relationship between her and Coach Gino Auriemma. More, I mean, it was respectful, but he...
It was a...
He kind of made her a target.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, Gino is, he's an alpha male.
Yeah.
Gino is very much an alpha male, and you know it the second he walks in a room. He commands a room. That's his personality. And he knew if he beat Pat, he could win the national championship. And Pat thought, oh, I don't shy away from anything.
Right.
I will play you. And there were remarks made during their time. And, you know, Tennessee was on the short end of a lot of, you know, Tennessee had a great run in the 90s. They had gone undefeated one year, and then Diana Taurasi came along at UConn and completely changed things for that program forever. And they were, you know, some of the, you know, there was, UConn has gone undefeated so many times that there's discussion, well, they just went undefeated for, you know, they just won the national championship 4 years in a row. Are these, you know, possibly the greatest team ever? Like, no, it's not even close. Those teams with Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird and Swin Cash, those are the greatest teams ever. Mm-hmm. And it was during that period where there would be some chirping back and forth in the media. And then there was an instance that's not, it's never been fully disclosed. I think most people know it has to do with the recruitment of Maya Moore that essentially turned their relationship from bickering but playing each other back and forth to, you know what, screw you.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
And that was Pat's call. Pat said, I'm not playing him. And he knows why. And he played the role that he has to. He can't acknowledge why they're not playing, but he does, and a lot of people do. And I'm sorry to be vague. It's not my place to say why they're not, but or didn't. But when Pat got sick, I know for a fact that Gino, I know because I had a conversation with the person who was with him when he found out, was devastated because of Pat's age.
Yeah.
And they're close to the same age, and it really devastated him. And when the Pat Summitt Foundation was formed, two really large checks came in. One from Peyton Manning and one from Gino Auriemma.
Nice.
Respect.
Yeah.
And there was a moment right before Pat's retirement. She retired after the Final Four, and I had saw her. It was a Final Four where it was the year Baylor had lost, but they were supposed to play UConn, but they had got beat by Louisville. So UConn actually stole a title that no one thought that they were going to win. It was that was Pat's last year, and they introduced Pat at halftime of one of those Final Four games. And I remember the ovation she got, and I remember looking at her from the stands thinking, she's really soaking this in. She doesn't normally do that.
Yeah.
And I had a short conversation with her the next day, and I remember leaving thinking she's going to retire.
Mm.
And the national championship was the next day, and Gino and Pat crossed paths and hugged. And it wasn't, it was,
you knew there was more to
it. It was an embrace.
Yeah.
Like, it was an embrace, and it stopped the room. Everyone stopped what they were doing and watched that. And I looked at that as the moment, okay, they've buried the hatchet.
Good.
That's good.
Good.
As I mentioned at the start of this show, it's going to be a little different than things that we normally do, but we do have Three the Hard Way coming at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. Nancy Lieberman's going to join us at 1:30. Sally Jenkins is going to join us next. It's 12:26, time for the Jacuzzi 60th anniversary sale at Jacuzzi of Sacramento. Call 315-TUBS, and we'll be back with more of the Lowdown next.
Coach Summitt, she's been a great friend to me, and she was one of the people that I sought advice from during my junior year when I was deciding whether to stay or go. I've always just thought Pat had great advice on things, and she gave me good counsel during that time, and she and I have remained close friends then. And I called her yesterday, and I told her that I always wished that I could have played for her. And you know, obviously it's a different sport, but you know, people always say that Pat Summitt could have coached a men's basketball team. I think she could have coached a football team. I really do. She's just a coach, and she's that good of a coach, and the impact that she has on the players that she's coached really says it all. But you know, she walks into a room, you stand up a little straighter, and you have her attention. So I've just had great respect for the job she's done as a coach, but also the job she's done as a mentor to so many young student athletes, and I appreciate her friendship very much.
Pat is definitely one of those people that when you meet them, you want her to like you.
I could totally
like
see
you,
that. Yeah.
Really,
you want
really,
to impress her as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you really do. Obviously, that was Peyton Manning. Most people know that voice anywhere. Obviously, today's show is a little bit unique, but we still have some business to attend to. So I got to let you know you could join Sports 1140 at Folsom Diesel Works today from 1 to 2 at 1126 Sibley Street in Folsom. With any oil or filter change, score 2 tickets to the Folsom Rodeo. Take care of your truck's overall performance. Visit them at FolsomDieselWorks.com. We're getting Sally Jenkins on the phone here in just a few minutes. She wrote a number of books for Pat Summitt.
You said that would be someone you want to like you. Sounds like it wasn't hard, though. If you can be, you know, you say, hey.
Be a good person,
know,
yeah.
Okay, Coach, you know, Miss Summitt or whatever, and you're like, no, it's Pat or Coach. I mean, just in how giving she was, and it's you just had to give her time. Right?
Yeah, I mean, she was. It's a line I want to save it for when we get Sally on the line here, but she had she uses this tremendous line to describe her relationship with Pat, and I totally get it. And excuse me, I'm sorry. We're getting on their phone now, so I'll save that
okay.
line. But it's so it encompasses the way you feel about Pat Summitt as a person and the way you hope she feels about you. It's a tremendous line that I've heard her use. Also, I feel it's important we know we don't have – Buddy Ryan passed away today also.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
We just don't have that tie or relationship with him. And there's no story I could ever tell you about Buddy Ryan except for the 30 for 30 regarding the Chicago Bears is incredible.
Yeah, we talked about that before we came on the air. We've all watched it and just how amazing, because it totally flips his image upside down, because you're thinking he's this tyrant of a coach, just mean,
absolutely,
and his players do everything out of fear and intimidation. And then when you see all these grown men and all the love, the unbelievable, just pure, unadulterated love and loyalty that they have to this man. And then the scene when he's struggling, obviously he had cancer for quite some time, and his body's starting to fail him, but his mind and his spirit still there.
Yeah.
And he does take the time to write that letter to the team.
That broke them.
And no one could finish reading the letter. And it's just one of those things you're like, wow. It's a beautiful, beautiful moment, because all those guys have that forever.
Right.
Right? It's an 85 team.
The impact of that coach.
And because of that coach. And that's one of those things you have forever. And, you know, that documentary went on to kind of illustrate the bond between Coach Ryan and Mike Singletary.
Mm-hmm.
And how that continued to evolve even after he stopped coaching and playing. That bond was still there.
Yeah, and he seems so tough, so much of an edge.
Yeah.
And his sons are free, fun-loving, kind of, they just do it a little differently.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's not one way to coach.
But they still have that toughness.
They do.
You see
Ryan,
especially on the sideline in Dallas and in New
Orleans.
In
him.
He's got that toughness.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, that toughness is what kind of causes Rex to call coaches out and call everybody out.
He's
like,
not
I'm
afraid.
Not afraid of you.
Yeah.
You know who my dad is?
Exactly.
I'm not afraid of you. So it's just one of those things where we talk about coach, man. Coach.
Yeah. Isn't it so funny how we look at, you hear people talk about Buddy Ryan, But you don't hear those same conversations about Rex and Rob because they're goofy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or Buddy's a badass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got a badass and two goofy boys over here who, like, were riding a unicycle together or something like that the other day.
Yeah.
Is tremendous. Yeah. But anyways, the point in me bringing him up, other than to stall for time until we get Sally on the phone, was I want to make sure that that's not ignored. That's obviously another major story in sports today. It just isn't the focal point of our show because we have the opportunity to bring you something that you won't hear in the morning. We have the opportunity to bring you something that you won't hear from Grant because of those relationships that we have.
It's something you may not hear anywhere. I mean, outside of Knoxville.
Yeah,
it's something you won't hear anywhere outside of Knoxville. Obviously, they have the intimate knowledge in all these stories, but outside of that area, you're not going to hear it.
Yeah. It was amazing. Someone noted, it was Jason Jones of the Sacramento Bee was talking about when Vicky Baugh, who played for the University of Tennessee, went to Sac High, how he met Pat the night Pat came here. Mm-hmm. And I was with Pat that night. She came over to the house, and as she's prone to do, she lost her keys. So we drove her, we drove her to the game, and it was, it's amazing. You walk in, and, generally you walk in, you walk past someone and they kind of look up and then you realize they do a double take and their eyes get big and you start seeing people do the tapping thing look. So in that atmosphere of a women's basketball game, seeing that was just tremendous.
I can understand how you were super intimidated to meet her, because I remember I had a chance to meet former Indiana basketball coach, a legendary coach, Bobby Knight, and I refused.
Why?
Because I was so intimidated.
Yeah.
I was like, there's nothing I can possibly say to him. I'm not even going to walk over there. Because he was in the studio. Yeah. We were doing our show, and he's walking by meeting every single member of the cast, and I got up and walked to the back because I couldn't. I was like, and I have no issue with the man. He's a fantastic, amazing coach, just a great man. And I would want to shake his hand and meet him. But for some reason, I was super intimidated. And I had just met Jim Brown.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I don't know what it is about.
Could have thrown a chair at him. That would have got you noticed and remembered.
Yeah, that would have helped. But I just couldn't do it. And I can imagine having the same reaction if I'm face-to-face with Pat Summitt. That would be like,
Okay, bye.
Gotta go.
I'm keeping an eye on Matt, our producer, and I'm texting Sally as we speak. The blue text messages are turning green, so I'm fearful. Maybe she's done a whole bunch of interviews today and her phone has died. We're going to continue to try to get a hold of her. Nancy Lieberman, the Basketball Hall of Famer and the Sacramento Kings assistant coach, is going to join us to share her thoughts at 1:30. And then Kara Lawson will join us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour.
Now, did we mention, and you probably know about this because you may have been there when one of the offers came through, that they asked Coach Summitt to coach the men twice.
Isn't that when she had the quote, "Why is this considered a step up?"
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's
Why would
that
I do
was that? Her response when they talked about her coaching the Tennessee men.
I love that.
I've won national championships with my women.
Yeah.
Why is coaching these men a step up?
The money, Coach. The money.
I wouldn't be so sure about that.
You don't think that there was more money in
not for
that
Pat.
Program.
Not for Pat.
No, really? Okay.
Pat, Gino, a small handful of others. No.
I didn't mean money for her salary. I meant the money just that it generates for the school.
No,
I would never insult her by saying that she'd be lured by money. No, I meant the money that it would generate for the team and the school. Because the men's program makes more money than a woman's program. Maybe it might be different in Tennessee
it's
and
different,
UConn.
Yeah, it's different in Tennessee and UConn. UConn is a little different because Calhoun was very good.
Yeah.
And Kevin Ollie.
Yeah.
Very good. That program, the Tennessee men's program.
Yeah, talking about the pressure there. Like, Bruce Pearl's a good coach, but you're not Pat Summitt.
Well, you had Bernie and Ernie. Mm-hmm. That's what you had there. You had Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld, and then you never really had much after that. Even though Pat...
Did Travis Ford go to Tennessee, the point guard, or was he Kentucky?
I don't feel he was Tennessee.
Or maybe Travis Mays.
No, Travis Mays was Texas.
I don't think either one of those Travises were.
Thank you.
I don't think either one of those.
No, maybe
Travises.
I thought Texas was Kentucky, Tennessee and Kentucky.
I think.
Sorry.
Yeah, but the men's program, I think, not that she's purposely cast a shadow, but how do you, like you mentioned, I mean, Gina was able to succeed because Connecticut also had a good men's program. But that would be a tough job. Like, you'd be excited. You'd take the Tennessee head coaching job as a man to coach the men's team, sure. Yeah. I was like, wait, who's over there? I gotta worry about that team.
Do you think maybe that's what led? Because Coach Pearl got he was found guilty of quite a few recruiting violations during his time there. You may be thinking, I got to keep up with what's happening over there because she is just a machine over there, and I got to get some players.
Yeah, could be. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, that is a lot of pressure.
It very much is. Summit used to have her girls playing against men in practice. That came through from the text line. That's an absolute fact.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she would play. They would have a practice team. Her son was on it. Then she'd have a number of kids from junior colleges or high schools come through and play, and they were all very, very good. But I think she was the first one to implement that, and that became a big story of, like, why do, you know, against purists, if you will, like, why do women have to practice against men to get better? Well, the reason they were doing it is because they were bigger, stronger, and they created a physical battle that other women couldn't replicate. We're happy to be joined by Sally Jenkins. Sally, first, you know, I know how close you are with Pat, and I'm so sorry for your loss, and I thank you so much for joining us today. I was kind of teasing a quote you said to me once, and I know you've said it to a number of people, and it's that, Pat, you may not necessarily be Pat's best friend, but she's yours.
Yes.
What is it about Pat Summit's personality that made so many of us feel that way?
Well, she had such a big heart. She had room for everybody, you know, and she adored her friends, and her friends adored her too. And she made everybody feel unique and special in her life. And you know, no matter who you were, and it, you know, she was that way with the usher in Thompson Bowling Arena.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody whose path she crossed that she didn't make them feel worthy and special.
Yeah,
you know, Sally, I understand that you've written two books. With and about Pat Summit. But I apologize for taking you to probably the most pedestrian of all the stories that you have heard or retold about Pat. I kind of want to know the details of the infamous story about her going on a recruiting trip, being pregnant, and refusing to have that baby anywhere but Tennessee. Please tell me.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's the most famous story about her, but she was recruiting a great player, a great point guard named Michelle Marciniak, who would eventually help her win a national championship. And she was due, but the doctor thought she could make one more trip, and her water broke in the living room of the recruit. So she and Nikki DeMoss, her, you know, close friend and assistant coach, rushed back to the airport and got on their private plane. And she was on her hands and knees in the aisle of the airplane having labor pains. And you know, the pilots could hear her in the cockpit, and they were like, we want to put this plane down in Virginia. Well, Tennessee had been beaten by Virginia in the NCAA tournament, and she said, if you land this plane in Virginia, you're going to have a mad woman on your hands. So she said, this baby's going to be born in Tennessee. So they got her home, and, you know, of course, she wanted to be with her husband and her family when the baby was born. And the pilots hit the gas so hard that when the plane landed and they got Pat onto a gurney, as they're wheeling her away, she looked back and she could see black streaks along the side of the airplane where the jet fuel had burned off. So that was Pat.
I love that so much.
Pat.
I know
she
it's one of the
great
famous.
Will.
Yeah. Well, thinking of, or hearing that, not that she had a bunch of yes people in her life, but who had the courage to tell her no?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, she just made you feel like she was in charge. I mean, she had real command, you know. She was a little over in high heels, about 6'2", depending on the size of the high heels. And she had those big, you know, intense blue eyes, and she made perfect eye contact. You know, most of us, our eyes are flitting all over the room. Pat would get you in that tractor beam and hold you there. And you just did what she said. I don't know how else to explain it.
I know one person who could stand up to her.
Your bride.
Miss Hazel.
Miss Hazel, that's
her
right.
Mother.
Pat's mother.
Yeah, Pat's mother. Pat,
that's certainly true.
Pat's mom, who's still alive, is the only person in the world who could call her Patricia.
Mm. Yeah.
If you called her Patricia, there was some trouble, huh, Sally?
Yeah. And she was, Miss Hazel, I think Pat deferred to her. I think, you know, her mother's really a wonderful, beautiful person, and all of Pat's warmth and all of Pat's generosity comes from Miss Hazel, and I think Pat just deferred to her mother out of respect.
Yeah. You know, Sally, it's you make your living by talking to people, so you're not necessarily going to be intimidated by a particular interview subject. But I wonder what it was like the very first time you sat down to speak with Coach Pat Summitt. What was that
you
like
know,
for you?
That's a really good, interesting question because, you know, like everyone else, you know, I've seen Pat at a podium or at a press conference, but I hadn't really been, you know, up close with her. And, you know, she is intimidating. But when we started work on the first book, she had decided that she was ready to talk and she was ready to be understood. And she had committed to that. And so a person who, for all of her life, had been very shy and very reserved, just decided that, you know, she wanted to do this book and she wanted people to know her better. And because she had made that commitment, she really just opened up the very first day. And I remember that night after the first interview, we talked for 2.5 hours. And I thought, first of all, what an interesting woman. And second of all, what an unexpectedly surprising woman. And she was just fascinating. And she just clearly was ready to talk. And I just felt privileged that I was like, I'm really lucky to be working on this book. And I'm lucky to be the person that gets to take all this down.
You know, there's a Sally Jenkins of both the Washington Post and Pat Summitt's biographer is joining us here. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've had a million media requests. One interesting thing I think we need to point out, one important thing that when we talk, when you tell the Tyler being born story, and you wrote about it and she's talked openly about it, is that Pat had a number of miscarriages leading up to Tyler being born.
Yeah, and she finally, you know, I had known that 20 years ago, and she hadn't been ready to put that in a book. And when we did the last book, the third book, Sum It Up, I said, do you think you want to talk about this finally? And she said, you know, I do. And so we included it in the book because she wanted people to understand, you know, just what Tyler meant to her and why it was so important, you know, that she was finally able to have a child.
I remember the first time she told me that. It was like, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. It was just me and her that were up. I was doing contract stuff for Kara had just become a free agent after the Sacramento Monarchs had folded. And free agency is very much a deal where GMs will call you at 12:01. And Pat, you know, coach, she had just gotten back from a trip and she was up watching film. And it was just, I always look back at it, Sally, and go, that was my moment with her, where we sat up until 4:30 in the morning, and we talked about everything from marriage. You know, she was going through a divorce at the time, to the difficulty of marriage, and she told me about Tyler. I think it was 5 miscarriages before Tyler was born.
Wow.
And, you know, she told me that story, and it was, you know, when I look back at my relationship with Pat, I go back to that and go, that was my moment where I go back to the line that I used that Sally said, I may not be her best friend, but she's mine.
Yeah,
and that's what I felt like at that moment.
Is there any way, Sally, and I'm not sure if it's even possible, is she an interview subject that may have an impact on your life moving forward?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pat made me. I mean, I was just a much younger and less accomplished person. I'd written one very small, not very good book before I met her, and I've written 10 books since. And, you know, working with Pat, she showed you what real commitment was. She showed you what real discipline was. Once you had seen her example, you couldn't turn your back on it, you know, without knowing in your conscience that you were cheating yourself. And that's what Pat did. She gave her players and the people who worked with her and worked around her a real sense of conscience that, you know, you may not give this everything, but you'll always know it. And that's going to haunt you. You know, it's incalculable, the influence she had on me. It's absolutely incalculable. And it's more than just, you know, becoming a better writer or a more disciplined writer. It was about how you treat people, how you treat yourself, how you present yourself. I mean, I can't count the number of influences she's had on me.
Sally, I'm curious, the impact obviously she had on Tennessee and the community is huge. Vice versa, what she got out of that. Did she ever have any serious considerations of going elsewhere?
You know, she was courted. I mean, she certainly had offers from other people. I think she definitely had some opportunities. I hesitate to name them because I'm not sure my memory is exactly correct. I'm pretty sure Virginia tried to hire her. I think she may have had a choice between going to work as a graduate assistant at Virginia or at Kentucky. Before she came to Tennessee, she was a young woman out of UT Martin, and I think that she had a chance to go to Kentucky, and I just think that she decided to stay closer to home, and wasn't the state lucky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Before we let you go, Sally, a lot of people know who Pat Summitt is, but a lot of people are getting to know Pat Summitt for the first time today. If there was one thing you wanted everyone to know about your friend, Pat Summitt, what would it be?
Well, probably what you would want people to know, Damien, just how kind she was. You know, she presented as this fierce character, and I mean, that certainly was Pat. She was very fierce, very strong. There was a lot of thunder and lightning, in Pat. But once she got off the court and when she was at home, the main quality she had was just enormous kindness to everybody. Her friends, her the usher in the stadium. It didn't matter, who.
We can't thank you enough, Sally. We'll see you very, very soon. All right.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
Sally Jenkins, Washington Post, Pat's biographer right there. Nancy Lieberman's going to join us at 1:30. We're going to hear from Kara Lawson at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. And that's the prevailing theme. Just a tremendously kind woman. Past the stare, past all the stuff you're going to see on the highlight clips on TV today, is she's just just an amazing woman.
Yeah, that's what we're getting, and definitely what we're trying to impart onto our listeners for sure.
And it was only one brief story you said about the breakfast, but honestly, just describing the way she cooked breakfast, and that goes a long way. Honestly, I mean, that's kind of very southernly and homely. It just, you get it.
She was the epitome of that.
Like, I'll whip something up. Even if it's not there, I'll whip it up.
Yeah.
I'll find it. I'll find you something.
I'll make something happen.
Yeah.
She is the epitome of that southern charm, that southern kindness. That's absolutely what she is.
But wait, you said there was bacon.
Yeah.
You ate the bacon?
Oh, this was before.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking the same thing.
Well, eggs. Like, I mean, eggs, too. No, this was
like,
before.
I got Pat's. Your coach is giving it. I got to eat it. Right.
But you know what? Even if I was a vegan at the time, I probably would have. I just would have dealt with the pain that came later on. There was a time when we went back to visit her after we had gone vegan, and Pat was like,
"What?
Someone, her assistant was conveying to her, well, you don't need to make this meat, and you don't need to make this stuff, but they'll come over for dinner. Pat, well, what are they going to eat? She didn't understand. She didn't understand what we were doing for that whole vegan thing. Everyone from Tex Nation who is texting us right now at 44 1140, we really appreciate all the kind words. We'll get back to each and every one of you. We got 3 the Hard Way coming up here next.